Every company has difference makers, the people who go above and beyond what's required. This podcast is dedicated to the people who challenge the status quo and make good companies great. Today, we're sharing one story from one company in our effort to inspire others. Welcome to Difference Makers. Today, my guest is Phil Lacusis, president of Preferred Rate Mortgage. Phil is a part-time resident of Naples, Florida, part-time resident of Chicago native, started in the business in Wall Street and worked his way into the mortgage business. Like I always say on my show, nobody gets into the mortgage business on purpose, you know. Usually there's a road that leads you there. Phil, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Thanks for being here. So one of the things that I thought would be an interesting thing to talk about was, you know, and we'll get into all that, is, you know, your interesting approach to the business. And it's one of obvious radical transparency, which really connects with me. You know, I've been at this for 30 plus years. I've seen all the hide the ball formats out there, you know, and what I call Me Too companies, you know, Me Too companies, Me Too, Me Too. We have this, we have that. And it's all the same. At the end of the day, they're still playing hide the ball with the margin. And that's, I think, what attracted me to you and your platform was that radical transparency approach that you take to the business. And I want to talk to you about how you got to that place, to where you could have such a model and really share in the windfall with the people that are actually making it rain. And thank you for doing this. It's been a long time coming. Tell me how you got into the business. I know you started in Wall Street. You were in the S&P futures on the trading floor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So started at Chicago Merc, actually. Was in the S&P futures. Started as a runner, then a clerk. Worked my way up to actually getting sponsored and having a seat in the S&P future pit. So I have a background, obviously, in the finance area of trading, and also eventually moved on as Open Outcry was kind of drying up and making a transition to the screen. Moved over to financial services and worked with J.P. Morgan doing asset management at the time. So been in corporate America, obviously been, you know, in the run and gun, fast paced world of being a trader and knowing what it's like to have your risk on and looking at that on a daily basis. So that helped kind of prime me, you know, to be able to obviously understand, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, what it's like to obviously have the ability to be a business owner. So that's where really everything began.
When you see a movie or you see that trading floor, you know, in a movie or in Hollywood or however it's depicted, is it really like that? Is it really that chaotic?
Oh yeah. I mean, it actually changed quite a bit. Even from when I originally started, there was less and less, you know, traders in the pit, but at the beginning you would have to fight and jockey for position. There was definitely some physical activity going on in the pit. So it the movies in some cases don't do it much justice, to tell you the truth.
Really? So it's worse.
Yeah, it could be. And it's the old adage. A lot of times back then it was who you know, not what you knew. Obviously in life that does take its course and plays, but it's definitely the Wild West. I mean, those days were a different animal. You know, you kind of learn two ways in life, what to do and not to do. Mm-hmm. And that was a time in my life where I learned not to do, because there was just a lot of different factors and things pulling on you in different directions.
So you became a top producer there, if I recall, and that sort of led you to some other opportunities in senior leadership positions, right? How did you transition to the mortgage business?
My brother, Chris, was very instrumental in that. Chris runs our operations and fulfillment. He actually was on the sales side to start. And, you know, having a background in not only finance, but having, you know, deep relationships in the real estate community and knowing a lot of different people and some of the connections I had early on, you know, he had suggested that it might be a better career path for me. So decided to jump in. I started as an originator in this business, and, you know, wanting to know everything about the craft and really the profession, I felt it was best to kind of learn from the ground up. So built a large network of referral partners, really just, you know, started just like anybody with a phone and started cold calling and was able to obviously develop and grow some of those relationships. So over time became a $100 million producer a few times in my career. on an annual basis, and really just was able to build a large network of, you know, trusted loan officers that, you know, really just took my guidance, and that's really where it all began.
So you were a $10 million a month personal producer yourself. It's not like you're, you know, sitting in some ivory tower. You know what it takes, and you can probably really appreciate what it takes to be successful as an originator in today's business. That being said, how did this model of transparency come to be where you're actually sharing in the revenue? Could you talk a little bit about that? You know, I think that started at another place, and you've sort of carried it and perfected it as you've gotten to then now preferred rate, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, just looking at the business as a whole, you know, I found that there was two, you know, main areas that this business, you know, lacked, which is, in my opinion, transparency. I think a lot of companies use that term very, very loosely and too often. And number two was really integrity. You know, there's been this whole kind of black cloud over the mortgage industry where, you know, people don't always do what they say, right? And, you know, while that could be really a way of the world, I think our industry actually magnifies that. There's just not a whole lot of out of core values that are, you know, brought to the table every day. So, you know, when I thought about what does it take to run a business, I really looked at just running a business first and then plugging into the mortgage industry, because what I found a lot of times is a lot of companies make the excuse like, well, that's just the standard kind of practice in the mortgage industry. And where the transparency part came in is nobody shares in capital markets, right? That's just standard. Even though they could say, hey, we're going to be transparent and we're only going to work for X, or that, hey, we're going to honor this particular structure and agreement, there was always this hidden, you know, agenda behind the curtain. And, you know, there is some risk to that. Obviously, you have to make sure that you're attracting, you know, the right individuals and the right partners when it comes to this, because you want people that not only understand the power of the transparency, but that they respect that and they are more of an entrepreneurial mindset. So it comes down to tying all that together, which really saying, hey, let's work and let's focus on our core values. Let's make sure that we can be different, right? What value can I provide, you know, any other partner that I'm looking to bring to the table? And, you know, when I looked at this, I didn't want to be like every other company, right? I didn't want to just be another color on a business card.
Right.
I wanted to be different. And quite honestly, I didn't want to be compared, you know, to, you know, what I would call, you know, corporate or more bureaucratic companies. So this is more of an entrepreneurial mindset. And to do that, you got to have true radical transparency and treat people like a partner. You don't just say it, you do it. And you do that by giving them the same visibility you have as an owner.
So when you first started out with that in mind, as you went to start growing, you were at another organization, I assume. And then I think you carried that on to another place. And then that place actually was acquired by a larger entity. And you made the decision to not go with that larger entity, but then to go ahead and bet on yourself. I think you wrote a fairly large check to leverage another platform so that you could create your own brand with your own controls. And how's that been working out for you? I mean, you're 3 or 4 years in now, right?
Listen, the journey has definitely served its purpose and course. You know, we've learned a lot along the way. The vision has always been not only radical transparency, but we want to provide the autonomy and the partnership and the transparency of a smaller enterprise. But we want to, you know, be able to leverage, you know, all the great things about a stronger, larger, you know, company and platform. So really that's been the vision the whole time. When, you know, during this journey, when we were part of smaller companies, you know, we felt the most valuable thing was truly the transparency and the autonomy, but we are always lacking products or certain, you know, technology tools and resources or stability or different benefits that come along with being part of a stronger, larger organization. So, you know, to be able to have that type of partnership that we have today, you know, takes sacrifice and it takes risk, right? There's no way you can, you know, have this type of partnership or opportunity, you know, without putting skin in the game. So we did just that. We bet on ourselves. We were able to obviously fund our transition here today and really fund our, you know, financial responsibility to be able to have the ability to be not only responsible on the credit side and underwriting side and have that autonomy, but really have the ability to take on the risk for our branch partners in the capital markets arena when it comes to, you know, hedging and it comes to, you know, the different components that go with having that risk in capital markets.
And it takes a lot of guts, really, to put yourself out there like that and to really, you know, really take that risk. But it's worth it because you mentioned having that transparency and treating people like partners versus an employee. That's really a different breed. This model is not for everybody because you're trusting them just as much as they're trusting you. Yes, there's transparency and there's visibility. That's part of the transparent model. But you are trusting them to run their business like a business, right? And so it's more than just being a good originator. It's actually understanding the numbers, having some financial intelligence about how this business works. And some of them don't really have all of that. And maybe you teach them that, right? You kind of walk them through that. Here's what this looks like. And here's why that looks like that. And this is how we maximize our profitability in this area versus that area, correct?
Well, this isn't for everyone. And I'm the first to admit, even having a background and having some trading experience and being in financial services, you know, the capital market side of things is a whole nother animal, right? So while I understand the mechanics of it, you know, there was a time period there where, you know, there was a lot to learn on my own, you know, accord. So, you know, as that experience and that opportunity continued to evolve, it helps me really what I call speak LO and speak sales, because the capital market leaders and capital markets experts obviously have a different mindset and they're very analytical. And sometimes they overcomplicate things when they're trying to teach and explain things. So one of the beauties of what we have is that we do get the opportunity to really not only teach the branch partners and teach the LOs, but we get to arm them with true transparent data so that they know if somebody's calling them and trying to recruit them, or they're in a competitive situation, or they're looking at their business and they're trying to figure out what the best way is to adapt to the changing market, they're armed with the true transparent revenue and the true transparency in pricing so that they understand the components that go into that. So it's a very powerful thing, because when you could control your own destiny and you understand it, it gives you a whole nother level of confidence. So the ability to communicate is another key component. The ability to not only just say it and do it and have third-party validation and be able to report to it, all those things tie together to make sure that you're delivering upon what you're representing and what those expectations are. So all that is equally as important.
So you have third-party validation, not just what you show them, but third-party validates those numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. The way that our opportunity really is set up, it's, you know, you don't just, you know, take our word for it. You don't just obviously get the reports from accounting. We actually have two third parties that give us fair market value on the servicing. We also have a hedge value given at the loan level on each and every loan. And we even can cross-reference the gain on sale through the purchase advices. So this is true radical transparency, so that nobody could ever question if we're actually giving them what we're representing, right? So ultimately, you know, that is what the power of this is. And, you know, one key component that I'd also like to add is you can offer true radical transparency when every one of your branches are on the same chassis, okay? And what ends up happening in our industry way too often is there's a lot of subsidizing that happens, whether it be the market is more competitive or certain people have certain side deals or they walk through a certain door and there's certain people making overrides or different things on that particular group for whatever reason, that creates the hurdle and the challenge of giving people true transparency, right? So because everyone's on the same chassis, because we have the reporting, because we have third-party validation, we can check and we can take them through this process to help them not only understand it, but to help them validate and they are confident in what we're actually providing them.
And you just made a really, really good point. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to somebody, and I'll mention a company name, because as you know, I don't work for just one company. I sort of represent a handful of lenders that I like and trust that I believe are good places for people to go. I don't really work with any company unless I've met the ownership, kind of visited their offices, looked under the hood, the whole thing. And you know, so you bring up a really good point. It's like, I'll mention a company name and they'll say, oh no, you know, I, I looked at their pricing about 3 months ago. Well, who did you talk to? Well, I had a branch guy call me out of North Carolina. It's like, okay, let me just paint this picture for you. North Carolina branch guy's got to get paid. His regional's got to get paid. That divisional's got to get paid. You know, whereas in your model, you don't have any of that.
It's a very linear opportunity. All the sales and production directly reports to me. So there is no middleman. We do have some supporting cast there to help me, you know, scale this so I could be accessible and be very involved as a leader. But there's not, you know, multiple hands in the cookie jar. When you look at some of these, you know, companies that typically have the values and really have the same tools that we have, you typically have a few different factors that go in. One, which I already mentioned, which is subsidizing. Two, you have different layers of management. And three, you have corporate initiatives like branding, whether it be, you know, your name on a billboard or a stadium. You have a lot of different costs that don't ultimately go down to the front line, right? And somebody's got to pay for that. So that's what really, you know, prevents, you know, companies from being truly transparent. Because yeah, those things can be valuable, and it's part of growing a company and being a top lender. But at the end of the day, that's really not what this is. What those type of companies are looking to do is they're looking for an exit plan, right? At some point in time, typically when you start a business, the day you start, you have your mission statement is the same day that you have your long-term and your exit plan, right? And anybody that has been part of the venture capitalists or part of, you know, the hedge fund, you know, arena, they'll tell you that the day they invest, they already have a, you know, a time frame on that and an exit strategy. So what ends up happening is these companies, they build it and they invest in all those other different corporate initiatives because it's part of that overall plan, right? Because there is a plan. With us, we didn't start preferred rate because we were looking to sell preferred rate. And that's been proven because we could have gotten a check almost 4 years ago, a very large check, right? So, you know, being younger leaders, being ambitious, being, you know, obviously transparent and wanting to build something different and want people to know that they're part of something and that they can count on us and they're really trusting and investing in that relationship. And it's our obligation to deliver upon that. When there's no hidden agendas and there's no corporate initiatives that are creating larger hurdles, you can truly be transparent and provide a much different opportunity than what everyone else in the industry is pitching.
If you don't lie, you don't have to remember what you said, right?
Absolutely.
Because the truth is the truth is the truth. And you can just, like you said, everyone's on the same chassis. Phil, for those that don't really understand, because we went right through it, people don't understand, I think, sometimes how different this model really is. I mean, here you've got the old guard, starchy Brooks Brothers mortgage banking, you know, model where they're going to hide the ball, never share, show you margins, going to give you 90 basis points because it's tough everywhere. And meanwhile, corporate never moves their margin. And then over here, you got the broker model where it's just, you know, razor thin pricing and no control, you know, over the process, you know, limited on compensation. You know, you really aren't in control as much as you just hope your wholesaler makes you look good. But here in your model, it is different. It's much different. And it's more competitive, I think. For the loan officer, it's definitely more rewarding financially speaking. You have more product than anybody that I've seen in the mortgage banking side. So you've done a great job there. It's not like you can say, oh, brokers have more product than preferred rate. They don't. But for those that don't understand, what is this model over here? When you say they subsidize, what does that exactly mean for those that don't understand?
They have different corporate margins for different, you know, whether it be different markets or different branches or different products. So they take those different margins that are higher in a lot of cases and they subsidize or they give other branches sharper and lower corporate objectives so that they can not only bring them on and get market share, but they can keep them more competitive, right? So typically what happens is, you know, when you have branches in the Southeast and in the Midwest, those are the branches that are subsidizing, you know, typically the West Coast or certain California markets or even the Mid-Atlantic market where things are a lot, you know, a lot more competitive, right? So what ends up happening when you're part of a bigger organization and they don't have that same transparency, it's a moving target. You never really know what your corporate objective is, number one. Number two is, what happens a lot of times when they bring you on is they show you one set of pricing and you really like it because they give you a log into your pricing engine or Optimal Blue, whatever pricing engine they're using, and you're attracted to that price. You like the comp, but then you're there 3 to 6 months and all of a sudden you're not as competitive as you were, right? Because they fade up the pricing on you. Then, and that's because you have no way of ever validating it. You have no way of seeing exactly what that loan is generating because they're never going to give you access to the true capital markets and true revenue because they obviously have to operate under that same type of model, which is really standard in distributed retail, right? Which is why some of the brokers have started to catch some momentum because some of these other companies are fairly top heavy and there are people or branches that actually have a larger corporate objective, which in this market, especially when it's super price sensitive, super competitive, there's less at-bats, that plays a role in retaining and it plays a role in making sure that those LOs can secure those clients and do the right thing for the borrower, really.
Difference Makers is powered by Verity Search. In today's competitive war for talent, they understand recruiting requires having a strong sales and marketing approach. Recruiting is not posting jobs online and waiting for unqualified people to apply. It's active, it's engaging, and it's working with people while maintaining extreme confidentiality. Their solutions and techniques are innovative and brave, but based on industry knowledge and key identification strategies. Some of the key services include strategy planning, research, marketing, prospect identification, qualification, and recruitment across all markets and geographies. If you'd like more information, please check out the website at veritysearch.com. Real quick, I'm going to jump in there because you would not believe how many people I talk to in the course of my week that don't understand how a P&L works. and I try to explain it to them, but so when you say corporate objective, you're talking about what corporate will accept for their side of the deal, profitability wise or gross profit. For a branch in DC where it's really heavy conventional, they'll go much thinner, almost at a break even. Whereas maybe they have a branch in El Paso who's 90% FHA, they'll make them sell much higher pricing and they'll take a little bit of Peter to pay Paul and make it, you know, so the loan officers and the producers in El Paso really have DC on their backs as well. I know it's an aggregation of all of it, and then they sort of do a formula, see if make sure that they're hitting their points, right? Their break points. And that's too bad. I like that you make every branch to sort of stand on its own economics. Tell me about your leadership style, Phil, like your views on leadership. How is that? Where did that begin? How does that have evolved? I can speak, you know, for me at 56, you know, I'd like to go back to 26-year-old Jim and punch him in the face. You know, it's like, what were you thinking? Treating people like that or talking to somebody like that, that's not leadership. You learn so much as you get older and you become more wise. And, you know, even coaching sports, youth sports, like, you know, it's just, yeah, it's like a light goes on after you hit about 40, 45. So tell me, how did you, what did your leadership start at and how has it evolved to today?
First, I'm a very passionate leader. You know, I could tell you that over the years, you know, you have to learn how to harness those emotions and that passion for the right reasons. You know, you hear too often in our industry, it's not personal, it's just business, you know, and ultimately when you care about people and you put your core values first and, you know, you have to make decisions sometimes that aren't always, you know, going to benefit the bottom line. If you always lean into doing the right thing, then I feel as a leader, you know, people can trust you. So anybody can have a title and say they're a boss. There's very few that are actually leaders. And, you know, you got to be selfless. You got to be willing to sacrifice. You got to be willing to do things that others won't do, right? And more importantly, you got to be humble along the way because, you know, there's nothing beneath you. I mean, this business will eat you up and spit you out. You know, just when you think you've cracked the code or you're riding high, you know, it'll humble you in a split second. So you just got to make sure that you treat people, you know, the way that, you know, you want to be treated. I grew up in a blue collar family. You know, my father raised me, you know, telling me you have your, you know, your word and your last name and you don't jeopardize those, right? So, you know, when I tell people something, they can count on it. You know, I'm always accessible, humble, always willing to get in the trench. It doesn't matter if you're a loan opener or you're my top producer, I'm going to treat you with the utmost respect. So it does create a culture. And again, I think that you can be passionate and emotional, but also put those into the to the right, you know, the right, you know, positive, you know, attributes, so that you're not obviously, you know, creating an environment that that could be somewhat negative or toxic. So it has been, you know, a process, because, you know, there's a lot of people. You look and you try to crack the code and say the toughest thing in running a business is managing different personalities, right? And trying to really deliver on what people's expectations are, right? And I just had to learn over the course of time that you're not going to leave for the day and always make everyone happy, right? And when you wear that on your sleeve and you take that, you know, personally, because you want the best for everyone, you got to learn how to really just learn from it, put yourself in their shoes, and really utilize that as a learning experience and not carry it into the next day. So the last thing I'll just say out of the core values, which is honesty, integrity, humility, you know, work ethic, I would just say that, you know, at the end of the day, there's no rear view mirrors here. You know, we always start the day fresh, and we always look at things with the glass half full. So as a leader in a tough time like this, you got to be able to come in and stand strong.
You're right. When things get constricted and tight like this, and you enter a period of consolidation and acquisition and companies really fighting just to stay alive, you know, it really pays to look at a company like yours that's really got good leadership, got to get in and make, because sometimes you got to make decisions for the good of everybody, right? And sometimes that means getting a little bit thinner where you need to get thinner, and, you know, lean times call for drastic measures sometimes, and the ones that are late to do that probably won't be here to do that very long.
Anybody can ride high when the times are good, right? You know, that was a black swan event for a couple of years. So, you know, that's something that we're never going to see again. But it comes down to the fact that you have to position yourself. Ultimately, you know, you can't cookie cut this, right? You can't just, you know, go at this on a daily basis and try to put a square peg in a round hole. You got to be willing to be open-minded, collaborate. You have to adapt. And we're using this time as an opportunity to get better. We're not only getting more efficient operationally, we're going to be coming at our competitors in a more aggressive fashion, where we control our destiny here, right? So I call preferred rate 2.0 on the other side of this thing, and we're going on offense for sure. We're not defensive. And, you know, the beauty about this thing is, as a leader, you know, we've been able to really, you know, through the pandemic and through the time where we were in this crazy boom and cycle, we always told our core values or our core operational team, hey, you know, if you stick with us, we know that there's a lot of, you know, companies recruiting and waving big checks out there, but when it gets tough again, and it will, you can count on us, right? You could count on us making decisions because it's the right decision, not because it's a head count, and not because we have to answer to Big Brother or we have a board of directors that we have to cut because we have no choice, right? And we've been able to stay true to that. And we've been able to limit the chaos and really shut it out. I'm not saying we haven't made adjustments and haven't had to tighten the belt. We have, like everyone. But in my opinion, the people that are here deserve a spot on the field. And those people, we stay in true to true through the time. And they're still here and they're not worried about their jobs.
So I always have this saying in my business, and my guys get sick and tired of hearing about it. I say, winners win. You know, I saw a video from Eric Thomas. He said, I don't know how to say it without just saying it, but winners win and losers lose. And, you know, it just happens that way. Winners find a way to win. What drives you to win every day?
I would say first, I have a lot of people to prove wrong. I always wake up every day. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know,
bet against you.
Yeah, they're going against you because they don't like to see others succeed, right? And, you know, first, that's what keeps me going. Number two is, quite honestly, my biggest fear as a leader is letting people down, right? And, you know, when you enter that hungry every single day, wanting to be better, wanting to be humble, learn from yesterday till today, you know, and you look at it and say, what can I do to be a better leader? What can I do to make this company better today than it was yesterday? And when you approach it like that, and you're a people pleaser, and you're always trying to put yourself in other people's shoes, there's always, you know, something you can improve on, right? So I would say that's always at the forefront of my mind, is that fear of letting others down, people that are counting on us, that have hooked their wagon to us, I'll say. And we want to make sure that we take that very seriously, that, hey, when they go home at night, we want to hear, you know, that gratifying, you know, testimonial to say, hey, you know, my spouse or, you know, my loved one doesn't come home stressed or worried about their job or worried about their future in a chaotic industry, right? They come home, they're happy, they know where they stand, they're part of something. And to me, that's the most gratifying event or gratifying accomplishment that you can have. When you get your team together, whether it be for holiday events or award trips, and you hear the spouses say, you know what, it's been life-changing since, you know, our, you know, family's been part of Preferred Rate. And it gives me goosebumps to this day. So what keeps me going is I love proving people wrong. And number two is the fear of letting others down and always want to deliver on what we promise people. And sometimes it's a lot taller mountain to climb, you know, depending on the market and different things. And certain things don't always work out the way you draw them up, but we're certainly not going to utilize, you know, that as an excuse. Sometimes you just got to get up and work a little bit harder.
What's something that you've gotten better at? What, like maybe one of the biggest failures that you had in your life that you learned from and got better at?
Yeah, I would say overall communicating. You know, I think, you know, if you're not getting something or you're not getting a result, it's certainly not because, you know, the opportunity isn't there or that, you know, that person is, you know, is failing. If you can't set expectations and you can't communicate and you can't help them understand, I think people, if they want to do something, they're going to do it. If you can't get them to understand and want to participate or want to understand and adopt certain things, you know, as a leader, then there's going to be friction, right? So what, nobody likes change. We're all creatures of habit. So I would say the thing that I feel that I've gotten, you know, that I've made the most progress in as a leader is just communicating and making sure that people understand why or how and what we have to do to get to the other end of this. And before, it was just like, hey, I'm going to take for granted that, you know, that people are loyal, right? That people know that I'm always going to do what I say and I'm always going to be there and show up. But people want to hear from you and they want to know what to expect. And I think setting expectations is critical in any relationship.
That's awesome, man. Greatest success to this date that you can think of professionally?
I would try to lead and tell you production, but I don't think that's what, you know, sets the level of success. I don't think income and production do. I would say really our core values. When we ended up, you know, partnering up here and moving over to ABM and being part of that, you know, and having that partnership with Preferred Rate, we had 100% retention rate, right? So at that point in time, we had almost 400 employees, okay? And now we have almost 800 employees, okay?
Wow.
And at that time, every single person moved over and committed to that transition. So that was probably my biggest accomplishment because a light went off and said, man, wow, people really do trust us. We always do the right thing. We put ourselves last. And at the end of the day, I could tell you our partners, they were, you know, taking wagers that, hey, do you think 70% and, you know, are going to make the move? Do you think 60%? And I got the call, you know, a very short while after 100% filled out their background link and signed and came on and said, this is unprecedented. We've never seen, you know, that type of following or that type of trust. And I think it's a testimonial to our core values. So I would say that's been our biggest and most proud accomplishment to this day.
That's no easy task. And it's only been up, been growing since then. It's been up. You've been going up the chart ever since. I think, didn't you guys pass the 5 billion mark or get pretty damn close to it here in the last year or two?
Yeah, exactly. We were just under 5 billion.
And, that's incredible. You know, 3 years
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of people got drunk on volume, you know, with the rates where they were, but we actually quadrupled our branch count.
Incredible.
And our footprint, you know, during that time. And here was really what it was. It was the transparency, whether it was wholesalers or whether it was other, you know, mortgage banks adding margin because they could. It wasn't as competitive, right? Borrowers weren't squawking at a 3.25 rate to 2.875, right? So, you know, ultimately, we had that transparency to our branches. So now, not only did our LOs run up the scoreboard, you know, and have more at-bats and more opportunities, but our branch managers had a much higher income level because they shared in that additional revenue. Because they're in our model, it's a true transparent revenue model where at the end of the day, it's not a corporate margin and then a branch margin, right? It's everything is included. So we actually operate under a 75-25 model, which means you get to see every basis point that comes in on your business. You get 75% of it, and our corporate objective is 25. So when things get more competitive, are 25% shrinks. But when things get obviously, you know, less competitive and more favorable, we have 25% growth. But you're 75% no matter what, you share in that. So that's where we can maintain that level playing field across our entire enterprise. So it is more of a revenue model than it is, hey, it's don't ask, don't tell what the corporate objective or the corporate, you know, margin is. And then you just worry about what you want your branch margins to be, right? And then ultimately what ends up happening is when you're having pricing pressure, what's the first thing the company says? You got to cut your margins, right? And that's not a true partnership, right? Not only are you not getting the visibility to know what it is, but they're not contributing, right? They're not helping you. In most cases, they're probably leaning on you and utilizing some of your revenue and subsidizing somebody else.
That's why you rolled this model out, right? To be fair to people that actually, to the people that are out there paying the price, you know, pounding the pavement, whatever you want to call it, your model is very rewarding for the people that make it rain. And that's what attracts me is I don't have to sell, you know, I just have to talk. And that's real powerful. You don't have to sell. You just have to tell the story. And everybody is on the same plan. And that's what's awesome. You have a company function. Everybody's on the same plan. You don't have to worry about what somebody's saying to somebody else because everybody's on the same damn plan.
At the end of the day, the branches that benefit the most are the ones that are subsidizing other ones, right? So needless to say, over time, there have been some companies where they haven't been too happy with us because, you know, no matter, you know, what the case may be, if they go through that exercise and we do a price comparison and we show them, hey, this is truly what you're generating. When we go and do our assessment and we can show them, hey, in real time, when you include your capital markets and at that target rate that you're selling, your margin is X, right? And they're like, wow, that's 100 basis points higher than I thought it was, right?
We use the term disruptor a lot, and it's overused, just like transparency is overused. But the words do mean something for those that actually appreciate what the words mean. And you've had a couple of big box presidents or CEOs call you direct and say, you know, WTF, right? Like,
yeah, they definitely weren't too happy about it. And ultimately, you know, their words weren't too kind, but you know, I guess they look at it like, hey, you know, you're nipping at our heels, right? So, you know, we're not going to be the company that strokes a huge boat.
Their cost structure is already set. It's too far down the road. Whereas you built yours like that from day one, your foundation is built on that.
Absolutely.
So you don't, like, again, you don't have to lie. You don't have to make up smoke and mirrored, you know, stories to recruit people. You don't have to show dating pricing and then give them married pricing. You don't have to play those games. And that's what I try to tell people is like, you know, if you're asking me for advice on your career, we're going to look at models that offer true and radical transparency, because I'm not going to go try to sell you down the river into some big box deal that's going to change the game on you.
And if you look at the different options today, you know, each company has its pros and cons. There's no doubt. I'm not going to say our company is perfect A to Z. As you said earlier in this, you know, in this podcast that, hey, you know, this isn't for everyone, right? But we know when we find the right partners, right? We find the right partners that are aligned with their core values and they have their priorities, you know, in line on what they're looking for. If somebody's looking for the largest upfront check, I'm not your choice, because there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? I'm not going to sit there and look you in the eyes and tell you that, you know, that company is not going to eventually clip that back from you by raising pricing, or they're going to get litigious by putting an agreement in front of you that has a teeth in it, where if you try to leave, they're going to try to take your business or get litigious. So we're a very portable platform. This is a true partnership. People come here because they plug into it. They believe in it. They want the transparency. It's a better opportunity. They want to stand on their own 2 feet. And most of all, they want to be portable, right? If I don't do what I say, they're free to leave.
I remember you telling me that when we first started working together, you said, I'm not going to have them sign a contract, Jim, and put handcuffs on people. If they leave me, shame on me. And I never forgot that. And I said, I want to work with that guy.
No, listen, there are certain cases where somebody would look at that and say, man, that guy's foolish, because, you know, people on the other end may not always honor their
right. But to be clear, it's not like you're not transitioning people. It's not like you're not giving them anything up front to come over. You're not making it to where they got to come over and make no money. I mean, you're definitely taking care of people. You're just not writing the exorbitant check, because your exorbitant check is coming to them every month.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Because you're actually sharing. It's as close as, I tell people, it's as close as you can get to owning your own business without your own capital risk.
That's the best way to describe it. But yeah, absolutely. You don't expect people to lose money to partner up with you. So there's definitely still a transitional plan. And we want to make sure that we have LOs and partners that come here and we can incentivize them so that they don't have to take and worry about being in this gray area or covert operation of when they start sending loans over. It's absolutely complete opposite. We preach, you want to exit graciously. You want to leave everything there. That is that company's. You want to close out your loan to the very last day that you work there. And then we'll make sure you have a couple month backstop so that you can get up and going and that you're not at a disadvantage for making a move. But once that's over, you immediately have the upside of much sharper economics, right? Much more transparency, so that from that day forward, you're absolutely in that positive.
Any interests outside the mortgage industry, or is it all work for you?
Oh, I love the golf, obviously. And, being in Florida a good portion of the time, that's certainly not a bad place to be. Other than that, definitely enjoy getting out on my boat. I definitely enjoy spending some time with my wife. As you could see, I do like food. So I definitely enjoy, going to new establishments and enjoying a good meal and sharing some laughs with some friends. So, just like to get out and be social, enjoy, being active. And most of all, really just enjoying, and being grateful for all the blessings and all the great people we have around us.
Man, thank you so much for doing this. Finally, this has been 3 or 4 months in the process, and I'm glad I got you to slow down long enough to do this and help get this message out. I want to say thanks to you and everybody over there at Preferred Rate. It's been a pleasure working with you guys. We got many more great things coming up in the pipeline, and look forward to many, many more. Phil, thank you again. Thanks for taking time to do this today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate you having me on here today, Jim. And again, sorry it's a little long overdue, but I guess better late than never. And
hey,
I look forward to the continued relationship with you and Jeff. I really appreciate you guys.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, everybody. If you guys have any interest in looking at Preferred Rate, we'll put our contact number on the screen. Feel free to reach out to us, and we'll make an introduction for you to Phil, and you can take a look under the hood yourself. But again, thanks, Phil. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.